from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Thursday when Pope Francis issued an encyclical of nearly 200 pages focused largely on climate change. The Pope writes that climate change is real, it is caused by humans, and it's getting worse. That's a position that is, of course, supported by science, but the Pope goes beyond that basic outline. Climate change's most painful impact, Pope Francis says, quote, will probably be felt by developing countries in coming decades. Many of the poor live in areas particularly affected by phenomena related to warming, end quote. The Pope goes on to say, quote, the world has a social debt toward the poor because they are denied the right to a life consistent with their inalienable dignity, end quote. And so what to do? The Pope's encyclical calls on all of us to act, but again, it goes beyond that. The Pope calls on politicians and governments to lead the way with new policies. The encyclical was celebrated by many scientists, many Catholics who revere their leader, but other Catholics and political leaders are asking the Pope to stay out of it. Non-scientist Rick Santorum accused the Pope of not understanding science, but it turns out that Pope Francis did study science. The National Catholic Reporter reports that Jorge Bergoglio earned a degree in chemistry and even worked as a chemist. NPR's Silvia Poggioli reported the same. But Santorum is Catholic. He says the Pope needs to stay out of this issue. Jeb Bush, also running for president, is a Catholic. He agrees. This hour, we look at the impact of the Pope's encyclical on climate change. What does it mean when religious leaders and organizations wade into climate change? My guests for the hour include Nancy Rourke, who's the director of the Catholic Studies Program at Canisius College. Nancy, great to see you here.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Dr. Mohammed Shafiq is here. He's the head of the Department of Religious Affairs at Nazareth College. I should say he's a professor. The executive director of the full name is the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue, a frequent guest on this program. And Dr. Shafiq, great to see you.
Thank you very much.
Also here is Robert Muehlnickel, who is a professor of philosophy and ethics and the director of the honors program at Monroe Community College. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Evan.
Also here is Sister Janet Korn from the Sisters of Mercy. Sister Korn, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
And on the line is Rabbi Doris Settel. And Rabbi, you're going to have to correct my pronunciation, but it is only out of admiration for you. We haven't spoken yet on the phone. You're joining us from Buffalo, I believe. Is that right?
Correct. And it's settled. That's fine.
Settled. Thank you, Rabbi. And Rabbi is not only a rabbi, but she's a biblical scholar known in, as a feminist theologian. And my understanding, Rabbi, is that, again, apart from this being a Pope's encyclical, other religious faiths around the world have in some ways signed on to it, et cetera. What's been going on in your own religious circles, and tell us about that.
Absolutely. So recently there was a letter on climate change circulated in the Jewish community, which originally 360 rabbis signed, which is a symbolic number for us related to life, and many more have signed since, which not only reflected the themes of care for creation, but as the Pope did, was concerned that social concerns be integrated into environmental concerns, that we understand the implications of climate not only in terms of the physical environment of earth and sky and sea, but the lives of the people who live on the earth as well.
Before we get to some of your phone calls, I want to kind of go around our panel and get their take on what we've seen so far from Pope Francis, and I think it starts with the definition of the term encyclical. Nancy Rourke, director of the Catholic Studies Program at Canisius, encyclical is a term that means what?
An encyclical is basically a letter. So this is a letter that a pope writes in consultation with all kinds of advisors, depending on who he wants to speak to in the process of writing. It has particular status as having more authority than other documents that the magisterium, that the Vatican may write. So it's generally longer. In previous encyclicals, it is a letter written to Catholics specifically, but this encyclical, he goes out of his way to note that it's written for everybody, for anyone of interest, anyone of goodwill. So it kind of, it has all the authority of the magisterium. It's being, it's a word coming from the Vatican on behalf of the Church, saying what it is that the Church teaches on a pretty specific topic. And written, you know, definitely with his own stamp of personality.
Sure.
Well.
And Nancy, this is where this distinction is important, because on this program in the last few months, we've had conversations about whether, you know, whether Pope Francis has, quote unquote, moved the Church to the left. And so often, whether he's talking about same-sex marriage, treatment of gay people, the climate, many other issues, he will make a statement and the media jumps on it. And then the Vatican says, whoa, 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 he was on an airplane talking offhand to a reporter. That wasn't a doctrinal change. You know, don't take that as a major shift. This is a little different than that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really important point. So in the Catholic tradition, there is this idea that the Pope can speak infallibly when he speaks from his office, but not every single thing he says is from his office, of course. And examples like that, you know, comments to reporters, they don't, according to the Church, have the same degree of authority as something like an encyclical. An encyclical has the highest authority.
Okay.
In comparison to all statements.
And so here we are, and let's ask around the table then. Sister Corin with the Sisters of Mercy. First of all, tell us about what the Sisters of Mercy do.
Well, Evan, we do so many different things. We have hospitals, schools, and just several ministries, mainly with people who are suffering from poverty, infirmities. We also have ministries in the Philippines and Central and South America. So we have been eagerly awaiting the Pope's encyclical. In fact, we sent a letter to the Pope listing all our concerns about the environment, and not just the environment, but how the environment touches on so many different things.
And what did you make of the Pope's, not only his encyclical, but the specifics within the encyclical that talked about the impact of climate change on the poor?
We're very concerned about that, especially our sisters who work in Central America, where the environment is being raped and people are losing their jobs and consequently suffering the effects of the environment. It's very serious for them, especially. We have five critical concerns that we're working on as an institute: immigration, earth, anti-racism, women and children, and nonviolence. And this encyclical really embraces all of those issues.
As Nancy said, this is a much more of an official position as opposed to sort of comments during an interview. Does this elevate the Pope's position in your mind to something, to a different kind of a place now?
It certainly does. I believe this document has moral authority for all of us, for the world, that we really have to look at our whole economic system and our political systems, not just the environment.
You heard Sister Corin say that the Sisters of Mercy had sent a letter to the Vatican on this issue. And this is not a Pope who is simply responding to kind of a political wind. As Sylvia Pajoli has reported, this is a Pope with a scientific background in his own life, but it is also a Pope who has met with scientists many times. In fact, as recently as April, the Vatican held an Academy of Sciences, and Nobel laureates were there. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was there. So this is a Pope who has tried to sort of take a full stock of the issue. And I think that is an important bit of background in understanding this. Robert Muehlnickel, what do you make of the Pope kind of trying to take stock before issuing this encyclical? He didn't do this in his first week or first month as Pope.
This encyclical shows signs of intense study and very careful thought. So one aspect of that is the integration of scientific findings about climate change and the human contribution to climate change, which the world's climate scientists take as a given at this point. The other is this theme of the common home, he calls it. So Francis talks about the earth as a common home. And this picks up a very important theme in modern political philosophy. So going back to Grotius, John Locke, Thomas Paine, the American patriotic writer, all talked about our common ownership of the earth as a kind of moral principle to guide our understanding of who should have access to the resources of the earth. And I see the Pope's use of this idea of a common home as a very close idea to this idea of our common ownership of the earth, as something that gives everyone right to the resources of the earth.
All right, so we're getting that sort of ethical, philosophical approach to it. We're hearing from the Catholic side. We heard Rabbi Settle, who's on the line with us from Buffalo. And let me ask Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, who, of course, is the executive director of the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue and a former director of the local Islamic Center. What is the Islamic faith? What reactions have you seen in your own community to the encyclical?
Well, let me first thank the Pope for initiating this issue. I mean, giving a religious sanction to it, that this is very important for all people who have faith, who believe on the Mother Earth, how the Mother Earth should be protected. I think it's a great initiative. Though this initiative started a while ago, talking about environment and what is damaging the environment, what will happen to the earth and those who live on the earth. I mean, it's not only human being, all creation, what will happen to the creation and where we are heading. So having that, and I think that initiative, I mean, it's a very, very important thing to see. If you look into Quran very clearly, the Quran consider the Mother Earth as ayah, means sign of God. If you want to understand God, look at the Mother Earth and the beauty of the Mother Earth. So if the Mother Earth is amana, trust in the hands of humanity. And humanity has to protect this trust because not only for themselves, but for all the creation. So, you know, in other words, we can enjoy our living here. We can be prosperous without any danger and damages. I think it is very clear what capitalism has done and what industrialism has done to the Mother Earth and what the greed has done to the Mother Earth and how we are violating the principle of the trust, which God has, if we are a believer in God, which God has put in our hands, that we need to protect that. It is. So I think this initiative, by coming from a Pope, from a religious figure, it's also not only he's addressing from the, you know, what he said, not only the Catholic community, but actually he is appealing to the consciousness of all people, whether they are religious or not. Look, this is our duty on earth, and we need to stand up. So the Muslim community is very much for that, and they, you know, we had discussions many times on this issue. Recently, there was the glaciers are melting all, you know, in the area, especially in the Himalayan mountains, what is happening in those areas, how some of the countries will have impact on that. So, I mean, these issues are there, and what we need to do. Our living doesn't mean that we violate the principle of protection and how to inhibition on earth. Meanings, we need to use the earth and its resources in a way that can help humanity and other creation to live and enjoy life.
Before we get to some of the dissent to what the Pope issued with his encyclical, which I think is important to examine, let me ask Rabbi Settle. Rabbi, this is a time in our own collective humanity when we are potentially divided along religious lines in a way that is potentially tragic and dangerous. Do you view climate change as a bridge issue among religions to bring people together?
Well, I think absolutely care for our earth is in all our traditions, and I would hope that all people of conscience and concern would be working together on this issue. There's no question that it's something that I would hope we would work together and it would bring us together. Yes, absolutely.
Jake writes to the program and says, the encyclical was leaked early by a Vatican insider. Largely, it's believed to take some steam out of this being a surprise. And as Jake is pointing out, I think it was essentially leaked last Monday, a week ago, officially being released on Thursday. Jake wants to know, does your panel have any thoughts on this kind of infighting with the Vatican? Is there infighting on this issue? Nancy, you're smiling.
Yeah, I heard a lot about this, and there was definitely a lot of discussion about this among theologians. So one of the reporters leaked the Italian draft of it, and a lot of us were kind of struggling with, ooh, should we read this one or should we wait? And he was, you know, he lost his press credentials. I'm not sure how all this works on the journalism side, but it seems like it was kind of maybe a particular lashback with regard to the topic of the encyclical and indicated, you know, there's infighting and dissent. But the Vatican's a very political world, and I think that happens with every pope. So it just struck me as, you know, another example of that kind of thing.
Is there a reason to think that this, Robert, is there a reason to think that the Vatican is sort of torn about whether internally this is even endorsed?
I think there's very good reason to think that among Catholics, there are a wide range of views about this encyclical. So late last week, I Googled Francis' encyclical climate change just to see what was coming up. And the first posting in Google was a paid advertisement from the Acton Institute.
Oh, no.
And the Acton Institute is run by some Catholics in Grand Rapids, and they are promoters of free market solutions to all problems. And they were clearly trying to lead people to interpret this encyclical in a way that would be least damaging to their concern for liberty and freedom of markets. So I think this is part of the Catholic Church today. It's been part of the Catholic Church, to my knowledge, its entire history, that there have been these tensions and differences of opinion. Yeah,
but I think it's a human phenomena. You know, when I look into Nostra Aetate, you can see, but it made a great difference. It's historical. And you see the world was changed through Nostra Aetate.
Yes.
The dialogue was initiated, how all faiths, the reach out to all faiths happened after Nostra Aetate. I think this is very important. It is very timely. And I would just want to give you a little bit at the Heikki Center. We had the conference in 2014 on wealth and poverty and Abrahamic religions. And from last year, we are planning for a conference on nature and environment. And we were thinking to do it on Abrahamic religion, but it is a human issue, so we open it to all religions and all faiths, including scientists, which will take place in May 2016. So academic conference. So, I mean, these are issues that academics, lay, religious, and everybody is concerned about it. So it's a very, very important issue, and I think this is an issue that what he has done is very timely, I believe.
Well, before I get to the – I want to make sure we let our listeners know. If you want to call the program, we'll take your calls and comments in a moment here. Frank and some others, we're going to be coming to you. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester, 263-9994. But I have to – just ask a baseline question on Catholic procedure, because every time we've talked about the Pope on this program, someone has called with this kind of a question, which I think is a fair one, which is, as a Catholic, can you go against this? This is an encyclical from the leader of your church who's supposed to be given an elevated to special position in the church. Nancy Rourke, can you go against an encyclical and still be a Catholic?
Go against the encyclical. Okay. I guess I would say, first of all, it's a big church, and I like the way that Dr. Shafiq put it. It's full of humans, which means that very often it's going to be a mess. I think when reading the encyclical, what you ought to take from it as a Catholic is the theology, and the theology is authoritative. There is, in Catholic tradition, a tradition of dissenting from magisterial teaching, which is to say authoritative official teaching of the church. And, you know, there's been a lot written about that, and that's worth looking into if that's a position that someone wants to take. And I would say that taking the encyclical as a source of information about science, if my students were to do that in their writing, I would say, well, that's not the right kind of source for information about science. But he does draw on the correct sources to present his scientific understanding of the nature of the world today. But to draw on it for theology and to say this is what the church officially says as an encyclical, that is what the church is saying. And I think it is possible to dissent from what the church says and still be Catholic. But I think you need to do it in a matter which is informed. And as always in Catholic thought, one's own conscience is what's inviolable.
Rabbi Settle, you want to jump in on that?
Well, I think that I'm less concerned about the authority in that sense. Obviously, the Pope is not authoritative within the Jewish community in that way. I think he speaks with the moral authority within his position in the world, obviously, and as a human being. I thought, actually, in the document, he spoke in a very powerful, authoritative moral voice in many parts of that. I think that the real divide, I was particularly struck by the section in which he talked about what was really going to be required of those of us in the developed world to make this a reality. And I think that some of the reaction to the encyclical and some of the pushback has been about that issue of how we define development and how we define progress and the real choices we're going to need to make in our lives. And I think that when you talked before about will this be something that brings us together or not, I think that it's not an issue of religion. I think that people of certain perspectives among all traditions will agree about these issues, and people of other perspectives will disagree, but it's going to be on that issue of what sacrifices are we as developed societies willing to make, and what are we willing to do to bring along those disadvantaged in the world in changing our lifestyles and changing our economies so that the earth as a whole can be healed.
Well, and here's a point of dissent. As you mentioned, Rabbi, you're exactly right. There are those who view this as an anti-capitalistic, kind of an encyclical. And I could have chosen a number of different voices on the dissent side, but we are entering a presidential election. As I said, Rick Santorum's a Catholic. Jeb Bush is a Catholic. They think the Pope should stay out of this. Mike Huckabee is an evangelical Christian, the former governor of Arkansas. He's running for president in 2016. He was on NBC's Meet the Press, and I think we have the sound ready to go from Mike. We do. Okay, so he was on NBC's Meet the Press. He told Chuck Todd that the key question is how to bring down for the poor. He says, if you want to help the poor, bring down the cost of energy. Cut the cost of a gallon of gasoline so we can all drive more and pay less. Chuck Todd followed up with this.
Climate change is not in your top of your agenda.
Climate change is maybe the wrong question. Good, stable energy prices and making America an exporter of energy, okay, not just for economic reasons, but quite frankly, to disrupt the balance of power with Russia, Iran, and the Saudis. This is a game changer, and America needs to be using the resources that it has, use them responsibly, but for heaven's sakes, use them to empower Americans. I know that when I was in college, I was being taught that if we didn't act very quickly, that we were going to be entering a global freezing. And you know, go back and look at the covers of Time and Newsweek from the early 70s. And we were told that if we didn't do something by 1980, we'd be popsicles. Now we're told that, you know, we're all burning up. Science is not as settled on that as it is on some things.
All right, that's Mike Huckabee on Meet the Press. My one comment to that is, it's always kind of a dumb argument when you say, well, a long time ago, people thought something different and they were wrong. You know, because Time magazine in 1450 published a cover about the world being flat. And you don't go back and say, well, how do we know the world was round? Time used to say the world was flat. So can anybody be sure? I mean, that is the dumb argument. But he is saying he thinks the way to help the poor is energy policy. So let me, before I get to your phone calls, let me ask the panel. I'm going to start with Sister Korn, because the Sisters of Mercy has zeroed in on helping poor people around the world. You just heard a presidential candidate and the possible next president of this country say that it is not about climate change. It's about lowering the cost of energy, and it starts with using what we have here. What do you say to that?
I think that's scary.
But he's saying, well, what about a single mom who can barely afford to drive to work or drive her kids to school?
Maybe in the short run, that might help, but never in the long haul. And in regard to the whole encyclical, it's laden with moral decisions, decisions that help people or hurt people. And I think we really have to look at each one of the choices we make in regard to our use of money, goods. In every facet of our lives, we make choices. And we really have to look at, are these moral choices? And I think in that lies the moral power of the encyclical.
Robert Muelnickel?
I think Mr. Huckabee's comment reflects really not paying attention to the scale of the problem. The reason environment and the climate is a difficult problem to deal with is because it is international, it's global, so our legal and moral frameworks aren't very well developed for thinking about legal international problems. It's also intergenerational. And it's very unclear exactly what our moral obligation is to generations that aren't even born yet, that we don't even know the identity of. And Mr. Huckabee's comments simply ignore those aspects of the problem. The issue about climate change and saying, oh, we should just lower the price of energy, is that it ignores the externalized costs of energy. Any economist will tell you that energy production that externalizes environmental cost is a practice where we avoid paying some of the costs of the energy we use. And those costs, unfortunately, get burdened on the poor, on people in third world countries. So I think Mr. Huckabee's statement that we heard, I don't know what else he might have said about climate change and the environment, but what we heard him say in that passage simply ignores the size of the problem, the scale of the problem, and the nature of the problem we face.
Rabbi Dror Settel.
In terms of response, I think I sort of said before, I think that, you know, I have to admit that I listen to things like that, and I think, doesn't this person have children and grandchildren? Mm. I mean, I wonder, it is very hard for me to understand how they see the earth progressing, the world progressing, society progressing with that kind of thinking, as an earlier speaker said, that in the short term, maybe you can think of using up these resources, but in the long run, in terms of what happens in the process of doing it, we're destroying ourselves. So it makes no sense to me.
Let me get a quick call before we let the rabbi go, because we've got a packed hour of guests here. Let me grab Frank in Rochester, who's been waiting to weigh in. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, Evan, thank you for this program. I hope everyone actually reads the encyclical. It's a profound document about the state of our existence at this point in time. This is what the Pope says in the encyclical, in paragraph 14. I urgently appeal, then, for a new dialogue about how we are shaping the future of the planet. We need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. Today's program would be a start of that dialogue. I hope others will call in, get engaged in the most important crisis of our age. And by the way, I'm the former chairperson of the Rochester Sierra Club. I host the Rochester blog, environment.com, and I'm an atheist. I think atheists tend to really care about our environment because there's nowhere else to go.
No, Frank is right.
I think the laughter you're hearing is affectionate laughter, Nancy Work, unless you're going to tell me that's not affectionate laughter. Nancy Work is the director of the Catholic Studies Program at Canisius. You laughed at Frank's comment.
It's a great comment, and it's an important reminder for those of us who come at this from a religious perspective. I appreciate it. That's great.
But I think the Pope comment should not be taken as a political, in a political sense. It's a moral duty of religious, especially from the religious point of view, those who are faithful people, it's their moral duty to stand where they can see the principles of morality are violated. So, like we do always, issues of racism, issues of other types, we stand together, meaning we need to raise our voices so the humanity or people can understand where we stand on issues like that. So I think he has done his moral duty. Now it is to the politician how they want to look into that and how they want to handle. But this is a moral issue, and I think people of faith and non-faith, as Frank said, we are all together. We are living in this on this earth like living together in a small boat, and we need to protect the boat and all of us all together. So I think the other point which I want to bring is not issue of poverty alone. It's a very broader issue environment. And that broader issue means that we need to look around as a whole how to protect nature and environment is our moral duty, as well as for politicians, their political duty, because we want to live a good life, not only for us, but the generation which has to come.
All right, before I get to our break, and we're going to bring in another phone guest in a moment, I've got to let Rabbi Settel go. Some final thoughts you want to leave with our audience, Rabbi Settel?
Well, I wanted to say, picking up on what the other caller said, in Jewish tradition we have stories called Midrash, which we learn from, and there's a story that when Adam was created, God took him around the Garden of Eden to show him the beauty of the earth and said, you must take good care of this, because if you destroy it, there'll be no world after this one. So while we may believe, we have many beliefs about afterlife or not afterlife, there will be no other earth like this, and we are all bound to protect it.
Rabbi Dror Settle talking to us from Buffalo today. Thank you for taking the time for this program, Rabbi.
Thank you.
All right, short break here on Connections, and we're going to get back to some of your phone calls. Pew Research has done an interesting study dividing that shows divisions on the Pope's encyclical among Catholic Democrats and Catholic Republicans. They might not surprise you, but I think it's important to examine that and what they mean. We'll also talk about some of the other issues that the Pope's encyclical brought up as well. So short break and more with you next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's summer boating season. We're looking at laws about who is allowed to operate a boat, how they get that permission, and how things have changed in New York State. We've seen too many tragedies on local waterways, and now it's time to look at how the laws impact all of us. Summer boating season, who gets licensed, and how? Next hour on Connections.
Republican Senator and presidential hopeful Marco Rubio launched his political career in West Miami, Florida.
He had a blueprint of where he wanted to go, and he knew the challenges along the way. He always was playing the game, looking down the field.
The place that shaped a presidential candidate, later on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the impact of Pope Francis's encyclical on climate change released last week. It's 184 pages in English, and if you want to read it online, as Frank, one of our callers, said, that's a very good idea to do that, and it's very easy to find. You can do that. Our panel's talking about that. Nancy Rourke is the director of the Catholic Studies Program at Canisius College. Sister Janet Korn is here from the Sisters of Mercy. Dr. Muhammad Shafiq is a professor at Nazareth College and the executive director of the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue. Robert Muehlnickel is a professor of philosophy and ethics at Monroe Community College and the director of the Honors Program there as we talk about this. And Joseph on Twitter sent me a link to a Pew study, and Joseph, thanks for that. Pew just asked for some thoughts on climate change among Catholics, because we're talking about, no matter what your faith background is, and whether you have a faith background or not, this issue impacts all of us. But it was Pope Francis of the Catholic Church with his encyclical last week. And even among Catholics, we see the divisions that we see almost politically to a T. So here we go. First of all, percentage of Catholics who believe that the earth is warming. All Catholics, 71%, but Catholic Democrats, 85%. Catholic Republicans, only 51%. Percent who believe that warming is caused by human activity. Catholic Democrats say 62%. But Catholic Republicans, only 24%. Fewer than 1 in 4 Catholic Republicans say human activity is causing it, when that is essentially settled. And percent who believe that warming is a very serious problem. Catholic Democrats, 64% yes. Catholic Republicans, 24% yes. So fewer than 1 in 4 Catholic Republicans are saying it's an issue. Nancy Rourke, does that bother you? Are you concerned about that division?
I'm concerned about it, but not for theological reasons. There's recent research that indicate that people take the positions that they take with regard to politics and morality more as a result of political identity or as a result of, you know, what they do for a living and the nature of their own economic status and their social circles than they do from, you know, rational argument, as it turns out. Rational argument may be of limited value with convincing humans of things, which I find also unsettling. But if that's true, it's good to know. I would say that the fact that what we are dealing with is an objection to or a rejection of what science has found troubles me quite a bit. But it is what science has found, and therefore it is what we will continue to see. So I think that those objections are short-lived.
Okay.
That they cannot continue.
No, it's fair. And you mentioned what science has found. I think it's also important for me as the host of this program to mention that when you hear Mike Huckabee say science is not as settled as people think, it is. Yeah. And the way that I choose to cover it from a journalistic perspective is, if you're going to take the position that climate change is either not happening or not caused by human activity, that is factually wrong from what science is showing us. And it's okay to say that. Now, if you want to talk about energy policy, I'm not going to make a factual judgment on what Mike Huckabee said. I think that's a policy debate apart from the facts. But I think Nancy is right in that there is some dissonance there regarding facts. Let me bring in another voice to the conversation, and that's Dr. Jerry Gaciak, who is a climate change ambassador trained by the U.S. bishops and a cardiologist at Rochester General Hospital. Is that right, Dr. Gasiak?
Absolutely, yes. Good afternoon to you.
Well, thank you for taking the time. Tell us a little bit about your training by the U.S. bishops, Doctor.
Well, the U.S. bishops have come down very strongly on care of creation and climate change for almost 15 years. They've had a very strong position, but they had trouble getting the word out. So they trained about 8 years ago, 26 of us from across the country, people who are not climate scientists, but also not priests, to just lay people to go out and give their position.
What do you make of the encyclical that you have seen, and frankly, not just the encyclical, but some of the division within the Catholic Church that we just talked about based on that Pew poll?
Yeah, I just came into the conversation, so I haven't heard what's gone on earlier, so I can't comment on that. And as you know, the encyclical is 189 pages, mm-hmm. so I've read about 20 of them so far. I'm actually savoring it because I think Pope Francis writes just very eloquently. You know, he is a scientist. He's master's level trained chemist. He was a teacher, so he really gets the science, and he writes just beautifully in a way that anybody can read it.
Doctor, let me ask you a question based on one of the comments you missed earlier in the hour, which is that Nancy Rourke, who is the director of the Catholic Studies program at Canisius College, said earlier this hour that, you know, we are human beings. The Catholic Church is a religion of human beings, and there are a lot of people, and things will sort of inevitably be messy, and that's okay. There will be some disagreements. There, you're never going to have a perfect monolith, and that's expected. But let me ask you, here's a follow-up comment from Twitter from Joseph, who writes, Francis is changing the meaning of climate change for Catholics. Interesting to see some cognitive dissonance that this is causing. What will libertarian Catholics now do? This is going to be really interesting to watch. I think that's an interesting question, Doctor. So if someone comes to you and says, I've been Catholic my whole life, but I think the Pope is wrong on climate change. I think this encyclical is wrong. I think he is lecturing against capitalism, and I don't want to be a part of it. What happens? Does the church start to fray? Do those people stay within the church? How do you view that?
Well, one of the beauties of the Catholic Church is it's meant to be universal, and so I think the Pope hopes to engage dialogue. One of the big problems in this country is it has become a political issue where, you know, it is not political. We're all in this world together. And that's what the Pope is trying to do, is get everybody talking about the really, it is a crisis on a world level, get people, he's not giving solutions to it, he's getting people to start the dialogue and be discussing it. I think people who say that the Pope's wrong on the facts, they've not been open and receptive to actually looking at the science themselves. They're listening to the Rush Limbaughs of the world who frankly have it wrong.
Let me get in a comment from an email that comes from John, who writes, Evan, keep in mind, Pope Francis is a Jesuit, and that means he is essentially a socialist. I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm just pointing it out, and that's okay with me. So, Robert Mulnickel, let's talk about this. John says the Pope's a Jesuit. That means he's a socialist, that the encyclical follows directly from that. You wanted to bring up his Jesuit spirituality. So, first of all, response to John's comment.
Sure. I know some Jesuits who are very good capitalists.
That's not mutually exclusive?
That's not mutually exclusive to be a Jesuit and to be appreciative of capitalism. And if you look at the ways Jesuits run their institutions, you will see that they have mastered a number of the practices of late capitalism. I don't think that being a Jesuit is necessarily being a socialist. I do think being a Jesuit means being committed to the message of Jesus Christ and being committed to a certain form of spirituality. And I think we can see that spirituality in this encyclical. When I read the sections of this encyclical dealing with policy questions, I did not see any strong tendency toward capitalism or toward socialism. I did see a strong tendency to criticize a kind of technocratic mentality that assumes all problems can be manipulated through the market. That, I think, even libertarians acknowledge is a problem. The Jesuit spirituality came through in section 19 of this encyclical, where Francis says that his goal is to challenge us, to dare to turn what is happening in the world into our own personal suffering. Here, Francis is asking us, can we identify with the suffering, the damage to nature, as if it is our own, because we are part of nature? I don't know if that's Catholic theology. I know it's good philosophy to say that humans are part of nature. But the Pope, I think, is asking us not simply to think about some ideas, but to change our hearts and our psychology, to say we are part of nature, nature is suffering, and we need to acknowledge our suffering with nature in order to work together to find the right policies to address that suffering.
And personally, I believe it's very wrong to label the Pope to be a socialist. It is prophetic. It's a prophetic message. If you look to the history of the prophets, I mean, I don't want to mention, but at least the key prophets, which is from Moses to Jesus to Muhammad, Abraham, and take others, all of them stood for protection of environment, for protection of poor, and you can see standing with poor and protections of environment. I mean, planting trees, other things. You can see a lot in their teaching. That doesn't mean they were socialist. Meaning how to create on the earth a human living which they could live and appreciate one another. And that could be, and that's why almost all religion teaches how those who have can share with those who have not. And all of them can work together how to beautify the earth. So this is a sort of prophetic teaching. I think Muslims would say the same thing. A Jewish scholar would say the same thing. And not only a Catholic, I mean, not only to say from the Pope, but this is a teaching that we all share together. So I think calling this type of teaching as a socialist type of teaching is very wrong. I think what he's doing is asking humanity to come to dialogue, asking politicians to dialogue on this issue, asking religious leaders to dialogue on this issue, and also asking the scientists and theologians, or religious experts from all faith to work together and dialogue on this issue, find a way how to protect the environment and nature.
I agree, and the encyclical gives us a moment to do this. There's socialism, there's libertarianism, but ultimately we are human beings, and so there is an awareness of the human ecology that we have a moment now to recognize the interdependency of humans on other forms of life and on other humans is just a reality that we've been kind of denying at the detriment of the health of our surroundings, and that will come back around and we'll internalize that.
Before I get back to the phones, one more quick comment from an email from Stephen, who says, you haven't touched on the elephant in the room, which is population control, which did come up in the encyclical. It's an interesting point. We have spoken on this program. Fred Guterl is the executive editor of Scientific American. His new book is about the possible extinction of species. He talks about population control as an important need. And one of the ways that he says we can get there is female empowerment. Now, Fred says that means more effective sexual education and availability of contraceptives. Pope Francis is kind of pushing back a little bit, I think, on that in this saying, you know, we can't be obsessed with population control. There are other ways to do it. Nancy Rourke.
Female empowerment is absolutely essential for a healthy ecology, for a healthy spirituality, and for a sustainable church or religion of any sort. I would say that population control is not a topic that's being talked about by serious ecologists and political scientists and environmentalists so much as the consumption that is being taken place, the degree of consumption and the amount of carbon emissions that a very small fraction of the population, that is us, are doing. So I think that's a little bit of a red herring, I think. The number of people is less a problem so much as the amount, of the kind of lifestyle that those of us in the 1% are living.
Okay.
That's the problem.
But the Pope is never, and understandably so, he's not going to endorse abortion. But did anyone in this on this panel take the encyclical as a pushback against contraceptives in any way? That's what our emailer seems to be saying. No?
I don't think that. No, I didn't see.
I don't.
That,
I read it yesterday and Saturday. I don't remember any mention of artificial contraception.
Okay.
Right.
But so this, it doesn't mean he hasn't changed whatever the teaching is, but he didn't mention it.
Okay.
But the unchecked population, the way it is growing, especially in the third world countries, if you call it third world countries, or, you know, developing nations, Africa, Asia, and other countries, you can see. I think there is a lack of education. With the lack of education, there is not much awareness to see what to do the possible way to limit the population in a way that could be, they could live better. So I think that is, if you look to the Africa and Asia, the total education is less than 30, even some countries are 20% educated, meaning they can read a newspaper. So more awareness will come where men and women are both educated. And you can see in those countries, educated people, how many children they have, plus those who are not well educated, how many children they have. And all the other thing is employment also. Staying at home and working, that also brings population control. So I think we need to be concerned about that also, because that's part of the disturbances which is happening in part of that world. The issue is unemployment, hunger, poverty, and because of the rising population, what we are facing today.
Sister Corn is someone who works on poverty issues here and with an organization, Sisters of Mercy, that works on it around the world. Some have argued that population, as Dr. Shafiq just pointed out, it is in more impoverished countries where population is growing without education, without female empowerment. Do you feel any dissonance within the Catholic Church and from your own Pope regarding the question of contraceptives, population control, if you want to put it that way?
No, and I agree with Dr. Shafiq that it certainly is a question of education. If people have an opportunity to learn and work together, I think things are going to be fine. I really do. Just one thought that has nothing to do with that question,
sure.
But I think there's a theme of liberation theology which comes from Latin America that is evident in the whole encyclical. And years ago, the Vatican did not look favorably on the theology of liberation. But I think now it has been recognized, and that the Pope demonstrates that in this encyclical. It's the theology of liberation takes people's actual living situations and look at what keeps them from being totally human and really tries to change that. So I think that encyclical contains so much of that, and it makes religion very livable, very human, and that we can tackle with those issues, things that keep us down or keep people from being totally human.
All right, last comment for the hour is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. My comment is that the nature of the environmental issues, serious, very, very serious issues, are bound to, because they're in a crisis kind of mode, are bound to more and more interface with the issues of economy, the capitalist system. And a lot of us think that's, as much as we don't want the environmental piece problem, we think that's probably a good thing, because look at the recession, all the stuff with Wall Street, inequities. So if we're forced to deal with it, then why not deal with it and begin to really be seriously critical about the economic system we have, which you really cannot separate from any of these other issues. We just keep denying, and not doing it. Maybe this serious threat should force us to begin to be more honest about what we should share and the overall morality of what a lot of times what we do not do in the way we should.
Bonnie, thanks for the phone call. Some final thoughts, about a minute left. Nancy?
I think everything is connected, just as Bonnie was saying. Justice is justice, and just injustice in one area is injustice elsewhere. It's a very ecological way to think.
Dr. Shafiq, some final thoughts?
Important that what Bonnie said and what we are discussing together, that we need not to take this issue that either is socialistic issue or political issue. We need to look into the core of issue as a human issue and work out through dialogue what we can do next.
Robert Muehl-Nickel?
I encourage people to read the encyclical, to reach for, try to attain that kind of affective relationship with nature that Francis of Assisi had and that this Pope is encouraging all of us to have.
And Sister Corinne?
At the outset of the encyclical, the Pope asked this question: what kind of world do we want to leave to those who come after us? So I think we need to reflect on that.
You've all given us a lot to think about this hour. My thanks to our guests around the table and on the phone with us, Dr. Jerry Gasiak, not only a cardiologist at Rochester General Hospital, but also a climate change ambassador trained by the U.S. bishops. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much for having us.
And also in studio, Nancy Rourke, the director of the Catholic Studies Program at Canisius College. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Sister
Thank
Janet you. Korn with the Sisters of Mercy. Thank you, Sister.
Thank you very much,
Robert
Evan.
Muelnickel with MCC. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Evan.
And Mohammed Shafiq, a professor and executive director of the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue at Nazareth College. Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Short break and a very different second hour on this Monday afternoon on Connections.